Accession number 17545, Reel 4.
Mr. Granfield, Reel 4.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they formed the 1st Royal Marine Brigade, as I said, and we were attacked the 33rd Indian Corps. We got kitted up with jungle unit. We'd done better jungle training than training landing from landing craft. And, well, obviously, we knew that we were going out to go at the Japs. And we was at this place one day, and I always remember we were putting scrim on a camouflage net, sat down on an old tin. I mean, this camp, as I called it, was miles from anywhere. We were there for Christmas, I remember that.
Which year is this?
43, Christmas 43. And Sergeant Major come up one day, they come, and I said, Granfield, you don't need that where you're going. And I said, where are we going? And home? He said, oh, I don't know. He said, we don't need that, pack it up. And I said, this camp, it was only tented camp, obviously, you know, we were miles from anywhere. And there was a track coming up, and I can remember this particular morning seeing the dispatch rider come up. And next thing, Battery Sergeant Major Buckle, his name was, he was a reservist from the First World War, you know. We had a lot of chaps that was being called up in the Fleet Reserve in 38, and that's how they got on the Courageous and survived and came up. And he said, right, strike the camp. We had packed it all up, and he said, you'll be on an advance party. He said, looking after the kit. I said, where to? Well, he said, you know what it's like, we don't know. Anyway, we packed up all our kit bags, not wanting them boys, and next thing I knew, we was down on Bombay Docks. This pile of kit bags, and there was a big the ship, and that was called the Strathaird. She's one of the Strath boats. Quite a big one, you know. And we got our stuff on board, and one night we pulled out one day, and the last thing I saw of India was the Gateway of India, which is, you can see from Bombay Docks. And in those days, when we went at sea, we used to look at the North Pole of the Southern Cross and find which way we were going. And much to our surprise, we started travelling west. We came back across the Indian Ocean, and I don't know how long it took. Next thing we knew, we were in Suez, where we'd been about 12 months before. Took us off the boat, put us in a camp. And I can remember one chap saying, well, look at me, he said, here we are. We're only about 100 yards from where we were 2 years ago. And I can always remember they had a sandstorm, and the ships out in the bay was all covered. And they'd only just opened the med, apparently, so we had to wait, and we came through the Suez Canal again. So I've been through the Suez Canal twice, but always the same way, from south to north here, from Port Said, from Suez to Port Said. And we came through the med, and
still in the Strathaird?
Yeah, it was on the Strathaird. And like I remember, well, coming through the we eventually came through the Straits of Gibraltar. I can remember one ship. Now, my chap that lived in Bridgewater, he was in the Lenth Royal Marine Battalion. He was on a boat called the Donata Castle. And she was always to the starboard of us. And we woke up one day as we was getting near Gibraltar, and she was missing. She disappeared. Of course, we never knew. I know, it was all that strange, you know. But anyway, the news eventually came round that she'd broke down, because she'd been on the Salerno landings, and she went into Gibraltar. Because when I came home, eventually reached Bridgewater, I went down to see his mother, and I said, well, Ron's on his way, I said, but he'd be about a fortnight behind. And that was that. And we came then to through the Straits of Gibraltar. I can remember coming through there, and the U-boat alarm went, because we always carried life jackets, you know, everywhere you went. And we was up on deck, and the weather was beginning to get colder, because we'd been abroad now for, what, 3.5, 4 years. And, you know, we're used to the sunshine. And We was in the forward well deck with Cardy floats, and that was our boat station. And if we were attacked or something, what we had to do was sling them over and dive in after them and hang on to these little handles, wooden handles they had around the Cardy floats. Anyway, the escort out in the urine dropping depth charges, and that went and finished. And then we eventually found our way and we got back into Glasgow. Sometime in March, that was, I don't know the date, but sometime in March, 1944. And, believe it or not, you know, they wouldn't let us write home, to say we was home. I do this and that, so anyway, we was tied up there, King George, I think it was King George V Docks it was called, because this started, she was a big ship, you know, because we were up level with the chap that worked the cranes and that. And a lot of us had written letters, you know. And I said to him, we were on the mess deck there one day talking about letters. And I just showed him inside me butler's trousers, walked down there, put me belt and me bayonet on, and walked across the field. And there were some railings, and there was a road, and this woman was coming down pushing a pram. I had about six letters. Point is, we didn't have no stamps on them, you see. And I said this, she was pale. I said, I wonder if you would do me a favor. I said, would you post these letters for me? I said, there's only one. Oh, yes, she said, certainly. I said, there's only one thing. I said, there's no stamps on them. Well, don't you worry about that, you know. I mean, we were in Scotland, you know, before we went abroad. I can go back to this after a bit. And anyway, and she took them off me, about half a dozen of them, and they must have got home. So we got off there, then we went to a place called Ardrossan, and we were re-kitted out there. This is when they brought the berries out, the first time we'd ever seen berries, you know, with the red patch and the badge in the front. And we were kitted out there and got new clothes and ponced up. And they said, right, you've got 6 weeks, you're entitled to 6 weeks leave for foreign service. But, oh, to the second front business, you only got to have a month. No, you can have 14 days, have it later on. So anyway, they put on a train, a troop train, as I would call it, coming down from Scotland. But the joys of living in the west of England, it only went to Farnsbristol. You found your own way down on there. And we came down on what we used to call the milk train then. And they came down to down to Bridge Over the Garage, because, I mean, the trees were better then than what they are now. And I can always remember it was about 7 o'clock in the morning we got there, and I lived out on the Taunton Road then. And as I was going up over Taunton Road Hill, over the canal bridge, my father was on his bike going to work. And he looked at me and he saw a ghost, I think. Although he knew I was back in England, he didn't know I was coming home because he'd had me letter, you know. And we had a month's leave. Went back to the Marine Depot down at, which was my depot down at Exton or Limpston. I still call it Exton, you see, because I got the X number. And we was down there and we started drilling and showing us how to salute on the march, out the left turn, out the right turn, you know, believe it. And of course, the sergeant instructor there, I suppose he'd just come in and got his few stripes. But this is true, we used to stand in the ranks and we used to shout out, get your knees brown, I'll get some time in. Who said that? Silence. And eventually said one day, exactly, you lot get out through the front door. And to digress a bit, when we got off, when we went down there from Scotland, eventually after our leave, we had to walk up a hill, and Colonel Sergeant Peters is on the gate. He was a drill sergeant, and I can remember him saying, "We walked in. Some of us had white, some of our, you know, our equipment was white. Some was jungle green. Some had that. Some had berry. Some had didn't." And he opened his long one. He said, I've never seen such a crowd of rabble in all my life. There was about 200 or 300 of us, you see, on down there. I'll knock you into shape. And he wants to be polite to that. But anyway, that's what we were doing. So I got a bit fed up with this, you know, because you do. I mean, when you, they always say, nearer the front line you are, the less discipline you come under, which is a fact of life, you know. And so anyway, the unit, our unit was being disbanded, the MMBDO was being disbanded completely, except for the heavy anti-aircraft regiment, which formed the 5th Anti-Aircraft Brigade, and they kept them, because they went to Antwerp and on the continent when these V-bombs was about, you know, these doodlebugs and that sort of thing. But they also supported the army, I think, with ground artillery across the River Scheldt when that Walkburn job was on. But anyway, we was down there, and then one day they said, well, right, we've done this training how to turn left and turn right and salute left Britons. And I was just about up there. And they said, right, now we're splitting you up, they said, into landing craft crews. You can be, this was for the second front, you know, this can be, you can either be an engine man, a deckhand, or a signalman. And I don't know, back in my early days in the Marines, I was essentially being a dispatch rider, like that. But in their days, you couldn't be a dispatch rider unless you was a trained signalman. And by the time I got to the depot in 1944, you couldn't be a signalman. You couldn't be a dispatcher either if you was a signalman. It was a general duties marine, you know that. But anyway, I went up before this officer and asked something about. I said I'd rather fancy signals, you know. And he said, he said, how old are you? I was, what was I, 26, I suppose. He said, you know, he said, you're a bit old to train for signal. I said, what do you mean a bit old? And he said, we found, he said, that we get young recruits just coming in, they're quicker on the uptake, see. And I had a chat with him about this and that. He said, oh, no. I said, well, do you know what credit? And I said, don't see it like you. He said, well, that's our experience. I'll tell you what, sir, I said, you send me to the signal school. I said, and I guarantee I won't come back. Now, I went there with a couple of dozen other chaps, and I stayed there, and some of them couldn't do it. They couldn't pass the signals, because they couldn't read a Morse, they couldn't read a lamp, they couldn't read the flags, either because they weren't interested, and I was. So that I was shipped off then to a place called Trecoon, which is near Fishguard in South Wales. And that's where the Royal Signal School was. So I went there, and I done my training as a signalman. You know, I could read 28 words a minute, Morse. 10 words on a lamp, I forget how many semaphore, and read flag hoist. In fact, I still got my book, signal book out there. And when I was up there, because the trouble is now I got to go back to Crete again, because when I come off of Crete, within 3 weeks I was in hospital. I'd suddenly come up in my mouth and I broke out all in sores up around here. And I had like a choking thing in my mouth. And I went into army also. And that was in May or June. I come off Crete, and it was June. And every year that I was in the Marines, about June, I was in hospital, the same thing. All the time I was abroad, when I went to India, I was in hospital. And then I came back, as I said, and I went on this signal school, signal class. And I passed, I got me flags, you know, I think it was Tanner a day, I think then, you know, so signalman, got me cross flag. And while I was up there, I said to the RSM one day, I said, you know, sir, I said, I'm entitled to 14 days of my foreign service leave. I said, I've only had a month. I said, what are the chances of getting away? Like, oh, no, he said, you can't. No. For Christmas, this was. And I sort of gone off the track a bit.
Yeah, you were saying something to do with this complaint.
This complaint. Well, anyway, when I was in the school, this thing came up in my throat. And they had a sick bay in Fishguard, and that was there for the Navy. basically, it was for the Marine Signal School, but they used to have a lot of submarine crew in there. The submarines used to operate out of the Fishguard, because at the moment another chief petty officer there worked on submarines regular, mentioned dispatches twice and all this other thing. And he had a Cuba glove of his own. He had his duty freeze, and once we got to know him, we went into his cabin. We all looked, and you couldn't see the place for smoke and the drink. But anyway, I was sent to this hospital, and there was a lieutenant commander, a surgeon lieutenant commander there, and he said to me, "You've had this every year since you've been in the services." I said, "Yes." And he said, "No, to be quite honest," he said, "I don't know anything about throats." He said, "But we'll have a look at this." Well, in the meantime, he gave me something and it burst. But apparently it was Quinn's disease, it was. He used to choke, because I could only eat soft fruit or drink, you know. And this was the same when I was overseas. Well, then I said, eventually he got over it. Because I remember one day he said to me, because it was a summer like this, I was bound to bury. One day he said to me, he said, we got some surgeon admiral, or rear admiral, coming round. He said to visit the sick bay today. He said, it was only a small boat, half a dozen beds or something like that, you know, and a couple of, they had a nursing sister and two VAD nurses there, voluntary aid detachment, they call them. He said, "I think I'd better put you in a bed," he said, "and put you out on the veranda. But if for God's sake," he said, "keep your irons underneath the clothes," he said, "because the way you look," he said, "you think you'd be on holiday." He said, "I know you went very well." But anyway, this chap came round, and I laid out, I was on the veranda, and he said to me, this admiral, wherever he was, he said, "Oh, you," and I said, "Oh, I'm all right, sir, thank you." And this surgeon commander told him what was wrong with me, and that was that, you know. So anyway, I got over that, and they sent me on 14 days sick leave, that was it, and I came home. And then I went back and completed my signal course, I get it right now. And then I said to the RSM about the Foreign Service, they say, and he said, I said, "Can I get home for Christmas?" And he said, "No, I doubt it." Anyway, I got home for the New Year. But the point of that was, you see, the fact that I was in there in June, I missed D-Day, because I should have gone to a landing craft ship. And always, this illness always come up in June. And so I didn't go, but I should, had I not been ill, and that, I would have gone, you see. Because they told me that I was going to. Now, I was doing a read there one day in this signal school. We had all these desks laid out with earphones on. Chief Petty Officer Yeoman of Signals was taking us to class. He'd call you up and you would answer back, daddy, 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 you know. And RSM came in one day. "Right, you lot outside, fall in three ranks. You to left, 31st Battalion. You in the middle, 32nd Battalion. You, 33rd Battalion," which was me. So I went then to Margate, and I joined the 33rd Battalion, 117th Infantry Brigade. Next thing, we was down at Margate. Cliftonville, just outside Margate. But we used to go down and do a PT on Margate Beach. And then when we got there, what we found out, that we'd met up with all the landing craft crews that had been over on D-Day, because, I don't know if you know, but Marines always do a certain amount of infantry training, no matter what you do, in their days anyway. And we caught up a lot of these landing craft crews that were surplus to requirement now, because they built the Mulberry Harbour and all this other thing, and they was pushing on up through France or whatever. And they formed into this 117th Brigade. But prior to that, they formed the 116th Infantry Brigade, which was over on the continent. And they were people that was out of the MNBDO, mostly, the three battalions, out of all these odd, you know, batteries and all that sort of thing had been disbanded. Because I know I had a mate out there. And rather strange, he joined up me, he was killed the day before the war finished, up called Holmescroft, you know, from Newton Abbott. He was killed the day before the war finished. And so we went up to Margate. Then one day they dumped us on a train, took us all up to Dalton in Furness. And when we got up there, we found that we were on, we had all sorts of, army people, line regiment people, you know, Duke of York's Light Infantry, Durham Light Infantry, King's Yorkshire, all these, nobody below the rank of a sergeant, and they were going to train us in infantry tactics, what they would call, you know, county regiment standard, you know, line battalions rather than marine battalions, which was a different concept altogether. And of course they started taking the mickey out of us, and they said, right, any Marines, now we show you what, you know, what soldiering is like. But they were all right, you know, they're up in the morning and doing this, that and the other. And as I told you, I was a trade signalman, but I had been then allocated to battalion headquarters, and I was working the signal switchboard there on my morning shift, you know, or night shift, and the phone went one day, the phone went, and it was Brigadier, I forget his name now. He said, Brigadier, he said, is Colonel Reese there? I said, well, as far as I know, so I said, he's in his quarters. He said, well, he said, keep ringing until you can work out. Incidentally, Colonel Reese, said, R-L-E-S, was in charge. He was the CO of the 45 Commando on D-Day, but he'd got wounded and come back, and then he took over our battalion. Always walked around with a 303 rifle over his shoulder with the butt back behind him. And anyway, I rang him up. I shouldn't have done this because it's naughty, but on the civilian switch, there's a switch, you see, and if you put the jack plug in and you've got your earphone on, provided you don't cough, sneeze, and the signal officer come in, you can hear what they're saying. And he said, Reese, is that you? He said, yes. He said, you're off within 48 hours. And Colonel Reese said to him across the other side, oh, don't be a fool, man, he said, you'll have a dispatch up in the morning. All the data. Within 48 hours, this is true, because I came off duty at 8 o'clock. I went and had my breakfast. I went down to Dalton in Furness, because my elder sister by then had packed up her job in Birmingham, owing to the bombing and that, and she was at a factory nurse down here in Bridgewater, and I rang her and I said, we're off tomorrow. I said, I can't tell you where. I said, I got money in my pocket, because I had about over £5, which was a lot of money in there. I showed him up and sent it down, addressed it to my dad, like, you know. And then we went down to Tilbury. I don't know the name of the ship we went on. And the next thing I knew, we were pulling into Ostend. And all the time I'd been at sea on these troop ships, that's the only time I felt really seasick. I said to my mate, we were up on the upper deck, full kit, you know, kit. Your full pack, all your rifles and your guns, and I said to a chap, I said, if I don't get off here, I said, I should be sick as a dog. But anyway, we got off before long. We got into Ostend, and we went into some barracks there that had been some old cavalry barracks. All I can remember were the trough was where the horses you and used to run down. It wasn't very pleasant. And then we moved then up on a train, and we went through, I remember going through Leaps, and then we finished up in a place called Bourges Leopold, or Leopoldsburg, it's Bourges Leopold, they called it then, you know, a chap called Fishwick. And we hadn't seen any trouble then, because, you see, the war was going on, you see, and then before we knew, we were in Brussels Airport, and you up yourself, don't worry about me, because you can have as much as you like. And yeah.